Today, I'm joined by Mary Coppola, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at the United Fresh Produce Association. Mary, thank you so much for joining us today on the Association Marketing Show. It's so good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So we always start with a little bit of personal and professional background, just to kind of level set and let everybody get to know you a little bit. So talk to me about your personal and professional background, how you made it into the wonderful world of associations, as I like to say, and then what your role is today.
Sure. I think, you know, none of us really set out to be association executives. So that certainly wasn't my goal. I had no clue when I was pursuing my career. So I am a trained graphic designer. I have my bachelor's and master's degree in graphic design as a fine artist, which I am not using in practice any longer, but certainly helped me become the marketer that I am today. So that's where I started from schooling. And then it was about 2008 when I finished my master's degree. I was trying to strike out on my own as a graphic designer, and the economy crashed, as we recall, those of us that were trying to work in 2008. And I decided I needed to be somewhere where there was some stability. I came up to DC from Savannah, Georgia, and found the trade association space. I started with a healthcare distribution association as their creative manager. And it's been about a decade now, made my way into fresh produce, which is an industry I absolutely adore. And I've been here now for 6 years with United Fresh Produce Association, who's the global trade association representing the fresh fruit and vegetable industry.
Cool. And what does your role look like today and your current scope there?
Yeah, so I'm the Vice President of Marketing and Communications, which is really unique in that it was focused mainly on marketing up until the pandemic. And then we had to pull in that PR expertise more frequently than I anticipated, but certainly loved flexing that muscle over this past year. So we're back to about 50-50 of the marketing and comms responsibilities, ensuring that our industry knows what we're doing for them as an association, but then also working with the industry to help them with their marketing and communication skills, which is really a benefit to the role.
That's so cool. I'd love to learn a little bit about United Fresh and kind of the lineup, what you've described the industry that you serve. What are the main products, services, resources that you as an organization provide your members? That's always a really helpful point for listeners too, because every association is similar but also different in terms of where they place their emphasis, right? Some are really event heavy, some are maybe a certification heavy. And so I'm kind of curious what your mix is there.
Yeah, so we certainly this year have been event heavy. United Fresh is made up of 25 professionals, and we represent 1,600 companies across our vertically integrated supply chain. So everyone from grower, wholesale distributor, fresh cut processors, all the way through retail, food service, school food service, basically wherever you and I are getting our fresh produce is where our supply chain ends. In terms of the association.
Gotcha.
And, you know, education has been so critical, not just this year. We've actually grown a reputation for having top-notch education at our events even prior to the pandemic. So we were able to grab onto that experience and carry it into the pandemic. One of the biggest pieces that we do as an association in terms of benefiting our industry is the work we do on Capitol Hill. We're headquartered in Washington, D.C. We work on a lot of food policy, whether it's nutrition policy, whether it's issues like immigration reform to ensure that we have folks to harvest our products, whether it's trade to ensure that our products can freely move in and out of the United States. A lot of issues that we're working on Capitol Hill. And right now, specifically, we're working on the transition to a new administration, which is a focus every 4 years, obviously. So that's a big piece of what we do. And then everything dovetails off of that with our trade event, with our leadership education, and then the resources to ensure that there's business continuity and opportunity across the supply chain.
So cool. And especially now in the pandemic, I'm sure you've been so involved in terms of supporting your industry through some really challenging times and unique challenges that have come from the pandemic. And we were talking about that a little bit on our prep call, which is just such an interesting thing, is to see in such a direct way how the work that you're doing and the members that you're supporting affect day-to-day life in a much more visible way now, maybe, than ever. It's always the case, you know. Yep. Food and fresh produce are so critical to all of our lives, but especially in the pandemic kind of situation, that has just been brought to the forefront even more. And so that's such a cool thing. It must be very satisfying for you also to see how the effect of your work and organization is impacting your members, of course, but then through your members, millions and tens of millions of people across the world.
Absolutely. And often there's that disconnect when we work in our trade associations about how the end consumer really interacts with our industry. I have been fortunate, and I take it down to kind of the community level, where our school food service director here in Prince William County, his son plays on my son's baseball team. So I have that direct connect at the end of every day, knowing that the work I'm doing in the association makes it all the way through the supply chain to the school where my kids are accessing fresh fruits and vegetables, in addition to what they're getting at home, of course. Right. But it's a really nice way to kind of tie it all together. And we joke in the office, we often come in and share experiences that we've had at supermarkets or at restaurants when we're engaging with our members' products. It is very common for us to post on social media or to email a member to say, I just tried your new, you know, lettuce bag or whatever product it is. So right. There's a constant reminder of the work we're doing in our day-to-day lives, because we too are consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So you're the vice president of marketing and communications. And so that implies that marketing and comms are under the same leadership and kind of part of the same team. Could you talk a little bit about that team setup? What's the size of the team and the kinds of different roles and specializations that you have? I'd love to just kind of, hear how you've set up your team and how that's going.
Sure. That was a little bit of a restructure when I came on board 6 years ago to move the comms back and have it dedicated department focusing on comms, not having it kind of splintered into different departments throughout the organization. Currently, I have a manager of digital marketing, and I have a manager of communications, and we're supported by a coordinator of creative services, which is how I started out in the trade association space. Gotcha. So as a team of four, we manage all of our external communications to the industry. We manage all of our website properties, email marketing, social media, and then we support we support our trade media as well as our other departments. So ensuring that we're working on editorial, we're working on advertising, wherever the reach is possible to get in front of our industry, our members and our non-members, my team is focused on finding those opportunities and capitalizing on them.
Yeah. I'm always so impressed at the level of work and output of marketing departments and comms departments at associations, like the resource to output ratio for association marketing crews must be some of the best, just in general for marketing teams anywhere. I'm always super impressed by that. It sounds like your team is no exception. To the point of marketing channels, I'd love for you to kind of describe the marketing channels that are most important and that are a part of your mix, the marketing and comms channels. Just for example, people have been calling for the death of email as a marketing channel for a decade at this point. But everybody I've talked to is email's our number one driver. And it's so the practical reality is different from what theory is saying and marketing futurists are saying and whatever, change happens all the time. But just what are your main marketing channels? What's kind of your main mix? And kind of, I don't know, rank ordered or just whichever seem, which are the most impactful for you and important for you?
Well, so I like to look at it as you need web properties, you need a digital presence in order to be the hub of the wheel, right? And then everything comes out of that. So whether it's your email marketing, whether it's your social media, whether it's any type of advertising or inbound drivers that you're working on, you have to have a strong web presence. We have a couple of web properties, whether it's our association website, our foundation website, our show website, but they all have to speak to our end user. Email is not dead. And I think that the differentiator there is that email is not just, I have a marketing database and I send emails from it, right? Like we, United Fresh uses HubSpot. So yes, HubSpot is a fabulous tool for email marketing. It's not the only email outreach that we do. One of probably the most valuable tools that we set up this past year is any type of community engagement. So we have the executives across the organization do something that we call our marketing, our community emails. It's a listserv, so it comes out of our member database, but it's a way to get our information for those specific market segments direct into the inboxes of our members. Sometimes it's more likely to have a higher open rate than a promotional email coming from HubSpot, but email is absolutely one of our most prominent tools that we're using. And then we carry that community concept into social media. So using the pandemic, because that's kind of the litmus test that we have from this past year, we were able to create a couple new community groups through LinkedIn. That was a way to segment our audience somewhere other than in a marketing database, where we could ensure that we're getting direct messages to them somewhere they're looking for news or information. So it's almost inbound in their regard. And that really has proven very successful for us to keep folks engaged on multiple platforms and ensure that what we're trying to share with our membership to their benefit is actually reaching them.
The Association Marketing Show is sponsored by Feather, the digital marketing toolkit for events and associations. Is your organization looking to ramp up its sponsorship strategy in 2021? Our latest ebook takes a close look at all of the ways you can leverage digital sponsorships to make up for lost revenue or create new revenue streams altogether. Get your free copy of How to Generate Digital Sponsorship Revenue in 2021 and more at feather.co/resources. That's feather.co/resources.
That's so great. I love how kind of like simply you're communicating your framework. To execute on it well is the challenge, and that's no easy task. But to have a simple framework that you use to kind of describe your marketing approach internally, externally, on this case in the podcast, is such an asset. It just creates clarity and creates momentum, as opposed to being like, well, our marketing workflow, and I have some of this bias, so I'm kind of, you know, dogging on myself a little bit here. It's like to be overly like romantic or complex about things, but I love the simplicity with which you're sharing it, which is like you have your key digital properties around your key assets for whatever they are for your organization. And then you have a few key kind of communication and distribution channels. And using those in more thoughtful, nuanced ways is often where the win can be. Sometimes the win is new initiative, launch a new marketing channel, you know, whatever that case might be. But sometimes the win is just more thoughtfully execute within the properties and the channels that you already have. It's just iterate in terms of, you know, the existing setup. And it's not always about, you know, implementing the next shiny, hot thing.
Well, and even if it is, and that's something you want to adopt, make sure that you're bringing it back to home base, if you will, right? So that's kind of what we think of our website as, and it's going to generate leads and it's going to serve its purpose as long as we're always coming back to Earth. If, you know, I'm starting to think of the Mars rover right now this week, it's so top of mind.
Right.
As long as it's always coming back and we're gaining the value and the interaction out of this new shiny channel that we're pursuing, then yes, that is a win.
Right.
But the disconnect happens when we get so caught up in those new opportunities that we forget to drive it back to where we're going to kind of close the deal, if you will.
Totally.
I think that's a great analogy.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I love that too. Maybe also just as an overview, for like the last year, which has obviously been a very unique year, what have been the main kind of categories of focus for you and your team? And how did those change in response to the pandemic?
Well, so Brandstorm, which is our upcoming marketing event, that was one of the last events where the industry actually got together last year It took place last February 2020 in Austin, Texas. So we were still running on this assumption that we were going to continue in person and that we were supporting the industry with education the way we always do.
Right.
You know, fast forward several weeks after Brandstorm and all of a sudden things came to a screeching halt. So United Fresh had to figure very quickly and overnight. Our teams executed on multiple levels. The government relations team had to figure out what all of these new guidance coming out, how that was going to impact our industry. Our membership team, as well as our industry relations team, needed to figure out how we were going to support our members. If you think about what happened with food last March, the food service industry shut down completely. Mm-hmm. Restaurants closed overnight. All of hospitality closed. Schools closed. So those are all major channels for us to move fresh produce. We not only had to figure out how to support those companies who were losing 80 or 90% of their businesses overnight, but then how to take that fresh perishable product and make sure that people could still access it. And mm-hmm. if you couldn't get it at a restaurant or school anymore, really the only place you could get it was at a retail store. And we're talking about a finite timeline. We're not talking months,
yeah, right.
We're talking weeks. In terms of shelf stability. So that was one of the quickest opportunities that we had, was to start partnering with other organizations, partnering with other businesses across our supply chain, and building new relationships for folks, making introductions. And we're doing it old school, we're doing it through email and phone calls, but we were able to start kind of turning that tide and moving that produce into a new channel. That was a very quick overnight action that had to be taken. And going back to talking about marketing and communications, that's where the PR side of my role and my team's role really became critical. Hmm. We started implementing a message a day from our CEO to the industry. We also decided to start taking down all those paywalls, so all of our resources became accessible to everyone in the industry. It was crisis mode. It was save your business. And we knew that we had an opportunity here to help the industry save their businesses.
Mm. I'm so resonating with the approach that you're talking about here, which is like being intensely member value focused, right? And yeah. Sometimes with an association, it's tough to navigate. And sometimes there's conflict between, you know, short-term association interest in terms of revenue and maybe long-term member value and relationship building and that kind of thing. And like, in principle, those things are tied together, right? The more value that you deliver, the healthier place that your association will be in. But when you're looking at different timelines, sometimes there's conflict, right? And so this is something that I've heard from association professionals many times, is that, hey, we recognized that despite the fact that our association was hurting because our members were hurting and we were not able to put on our big annual meeting and all the revenue from that was lost, et cetera, despite all of that, the tact right now is not to try to immediately recoup as much revenue as possible and sell new things to our members.
Yes.
If we can tolerate it, and not every association can, they don't have as much runway as others, the thing to do is to serve our members even more sincerely and even more deeply in terms of in their moment of need right now, which is maybe the most intense moment of need that many industries have felt in a really, really long time. And if we can do that, focus on delivering value, sometimes directly in opposition to revenue generation, like in the case that you're just describing of removing all of your paywalls to content and education, etc., that is a bad short-term move from a business revenue standpoint. But yes, when you're focused on delivering member value and long-term health and performance of the association, so to speak,
yep,
that is absolutely the right move. Because you'll build that deeper relationship. Your members will remember you. They will remember that decision that you've made that was, again, against the short-term interests of the association, but prioritizing the value of the members, and that will lead to a deeper connection and to more revenue and engagement over time with your members. But you have to have kind of a patient long-term outlook to make that call.
Yeah, and I wish I could say those were strategic decisions, but really in the time that we were in, they were genuinely decisions based on empathy and ensuring that our members did not lose their businesses.
Yeah.
They were not strategic. It was one of those things where it was like, let's just make sure that they can move product tomorrow and day after day, and we'll worry about the repercussions down the line. And mm-hmm. and you're right. If we were thinking strategically, we might have had the foresight to say, these members will be thankful and we'll have, you know, more membership come to fruition and we'll have stronger relationships with them. But we weren't thinking that. However, a year later, that is exactly what happened. Mm.
I'd love to talk about some more of the details of how that pivot took place. I know you had your big June event, which obviously had to be pivoted virtual, but maybe talk me through what the original plans for that were, how you changed the format, what kind of timelines you're working with, and then how that went, and then how your experience with your June event, which pivoted virtual, kind of informed the rest of 2020 and what's going on right now in 2021.
Yeah, so, you know, again, last year at Brandstorm, and I'll keep coming back to that because it really is our opportunity to gather the marketers in the fresh produce industry. So of course, we're talking to them about exhibiting at our June show. They're the folks that make the decisions about that exhibit. So we spent time doing some exhibitor education last February before we knew what was going to happen. We were planning to be live in person in June in San Diego after 6 years of being in Chicago in June. So it was an exciting time for us to be making that transition back to the Pacific Coast in the first place. We get a lot of interest on the Pacific Coast as that's where a lot of the growers in the fresh produce industry reside. So it was exciting. We were looking forward to it. Our industry was looking forward to it. We were already trending great with registration and exhibitors. And then March happened and we kept an eye on what the industry was doing. There were a number of smaller regional shows that were planning to take place in late March, early April. And it felt like day after day, we were seeing another press release about folks pulling the plug on their shows. And one mantra almost that we adopted internally was, do not say the C word being canceled. We were not gonna do it. We were adamant that that's not gonna happen. We have to deliver the value of the show in any way possible if we cannot host it in person.
Okay.
So we did make that decision pretty quickly. We made the announcement on March 31st, so within 3 weeks of the pandemic shutting down the world, yep. really, and wanted to make sure we didn't announce that on April 1st. We pushed to get it out on March 31st.
Yeah.
And then that essentially gave us 90 days to transition from in-person to 100% virtual. The show was June 16th. So we got to work immediately. We found new vendor partners that were going to help us create the experience that we wanted online to ensure that our exhibitors each had a unique space. Mm. But the biggest challenges at that point really was not just ourselves learning as we were going, mm-hmm. But then every time we turned a corner and learned something new about this platform, about how we were going to bring buyers into the environment, how we were going to host education, we had to communicate that out, not only to the exhibitors, but also to the attendees. Because if you think back to last spring, everything was so new. Zooming was so new,
yeah.
Teams was so new, that there wasn't a comfort level yet in engaging on a virtual platform or learning on a virtual platform. We just weren't there as a society yet. And so not only were we asking our industry to stay with us and keep their investment with us, but we were asking them to trust us that we were going to deliver on value that they knew of in person, mm-hmm. but we were gonna do it without anybody having to leave their homes.
Right.
So that was quite an undertaking in those 90 days. But we learned a lot, and that education and communication was critical. I know transparency is one of those hot words from 2020, but it absolutely was imperative that we were being transparent about what we were learning and what you as an exhibitor or an attendee were going to experience. Mm. And then once we had success in June, which I'm happy to report we had success in June, we kept that going. So I do want to share with you some of that success that we had.
Absolutely, I'd love to hear it.
we took our 5,000 person on average in-person show. And when we moved it onto a virtual platform, there were a couple decisions that aligned with the other services that we were providing to the industry at that time. We decided to make the show free for all. So there was no registration fee. All you had to do was sign up. Again, that decision was made more out of empathy than it was as a business decision.
Yeah.
But it paid off. We ended up having close to 1,200 unique users on the platform throughout the week of the event. So to more than double the touch that we had with users at that event. The education was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Our exhibitors were happy. We grew our exhibitor community. So this was an opportunity, being virtual, to start engaging companies and countries from around the globe that never would have traveled to the US for a trade show.
Right.
Right. And they too were in a position where the other trade shows they were planning to participate in had completely pulled the plug this right. year. So again, remember, we didn't use the C word. So we were happy to say to them, we have a home for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we grew our exhibitors, we grew our attendees. Mm. And the most critical piece of all of that growth, once we took a day or two to rest after that event, was that we needed to keep those folks engaged. We couldn't just let them come for a one and done and not have a relationship with them anymore. So we built what we call the summer sessions. And then that turned into Learn and Engage this fall, which has carried into this winter.
Mm.
Those were opportunities for us on a weekly basis to host a webinar for any segmented group of our industry. So if it was food safety, if it was school food service directors, marketers, we were having a meetup or a networking Zoom. Mm. We were having a webinar on our trends reports. We were having an update from FDA. So there was an opportunity on a regular basis to keep folks engaged.
Yeah.
And again, in 2020, all of that was free. So whether you were a member or a non-member, you could come and participate with those communities.
Mm.
That really set us up for new relationships and growth in 2021.
Mm. That's, yeah, that point is also just such a great and salient point, which is, okay, yes, and a lot of people have reported this kind of benefit of going virtual and then going either super reduced cost or completely free, leading to much larger reach, especially if that was done like in the early months of the pandemic, when like both demand for education and information was really high, because we're in uncharted territories, and a natural place to look for guidance is to the professional association for your industry. That makes a lot of sense. So there was a lot of demand for information, and also many alternatives dropped off the map, right? Other kinds of events and all kinds of things like that. And so going virtual and going low cost or free cost on events in the early months of the pandemic really paid off for a lot of folks in the way that you're describing, in terms of really vastly improving reach. But this step two of, okay, that's not the win. That's just the beginning of the process. Now we have to turn this expanded reach into like deeply engaged audience members. And how do we do that? There's a step two to this process here. And it sounds like the way that you handled it was through a large series of these Zoom meetups and webinars and educational sessions for different segments of your audience that capitalized on that expanded reach and turned that into deeper and deeper engagement over time.
Yeah, and we got a broader group of our staff engaged in planning these events. So understanding who they each were interacting with on a regular basis and what community we could pull together. Young Professionals was a really great community that kept coming back pretty frequently. And each time we would conclude one of those networking events, the emails coming in with, you know, that was so fantastic. Thank you for doing this. It's the only time I'm interacting with anyone in the industry.
Mm.
That was icing on the cake. It was like, okay, pick the next date. We've got to do this again.
Right.
We can't lose this momentum. Right. And that was the case throughout the whole summer last year.
Awesome. How has that set you up for 2021? What is 2021 looking like from a planning, strategic standpoint? What have you learned from last year that's informed your plans this year?
Well, we've learned a lot about keeping people engaged and informed. And if we can use that as the baseline for every conversation we have about developing new programming or going back in person, and when that happens, and if that happens this year, then that really is going to be the North Star for us. We have an excellent education team. They are Zoom experts. They know how to use all of the tools, and we're really relying on Zoom a lot. I wish we all had the foresight to buy a little stock in Zoom before last March. But the benefit is that folks are coming together, introvert or extrovert.
Yeah.
You can get on a Zoom and you can have just as much value as you would in an in-person. And so the more that we can keep creating opportunities for folks to dial in and learn and engage, that's it. Mm-hmm. That's going to continue to build that foundation of relationship with the industry that we need right now. We haven't lost sight of that. It certainly is what we continue to do with all of our programming, but we're slowly adding back in the pay for service. So we're measuring the value of the education now that we know how to do it so well. We're taking a look at our programs from a year ago and saying, okay, this community wants this education. They're willing to pay for it because they see the value in it. Let's add that paywall back. Let's see if we can help bolster the association's revenue and creating new opportunities this year, now that we know that we have that engaged community. And so there's different levels of how we're doing that. We're still keeping some things free. We're still really keeping the rates lower because you don't have those travel costs anymore. We're not feeding anyone this year. We don't have those coffee bars and all that good stuff. So we're testing the water and we're in Q1 and things are going really well. Brandstorm, which is 2 weeks away, is tracking ahead of registration last year. The rate's a little lower, but people are still paying for this education. So we're taking what we learned, we're implementing it, and we're getting back to who we were before the pandemic, informed by who we became during the pandemic.
Congrats. That's so amazing to hear. I'm so glad to hear that. And yeah, it's, again, everything that you're describing is just like so clearly articulated, and which is, last year it sounds like was a lot of maybe experimentation. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but going in a lot of different directions and engaging with segments of your audience in deeper ways than you had in before, and doing it all free, focusing on, again, member value and engagement, and that being a learning experience for you and your team, but the organization more broadly, to then inform the strategy for 2021. Okay, looking back, what did really well last year? Who were maybe more engaged segments of our audience than we've had ever than ever before? What have we learned about content formatting and programming and planning that can and should inform our 2021 priorities? And where have we discovered that there is appetite for paying for and therefore more value that we can deliver if it's a if it's a revenue generating product, we can invest more into it as well. So let's both invest more and generate revenue from some of these things, from this variety of experiments that we've run last year, and now that we have, you know, some experience to look back on and make these decisions from.
Yeah, and relying on our members to help guide us, right? We're not making this, these decisions in a vacuum. Right. We have an advisory committee for every event that we do, whether it's a single one-hour webinar or if it's a, the full trade show. We are relying on our members to say to us, yes, we can as an industry support this and we want to support this, or I don't know if this is really the time for this. Maybe this is something we move to a different quarter this year, or let's get through X, Y, Z and then readdress that. So critical to have those relationships in place prior to and during to make sure that we are staying on the right course.
Totally. Gosh, there's so much I'd love to dig in about more, but I want to get to the last couple of questions here. Sure. And one thing is, I know that you're a huge advocate of brand as a kind of competitive advantage for organizations, and that Brandstorm is an event that's all about supporting the development of brands within your particular audience. But that also, you coming from a design background, that seems to be something you're really invested in and passionate about.
Yes.
So I'd love for you to just, I know it's a huge topic and this should be a whole nother podcast episode, but briefly, if you can, what is a good brand? Maybe what are some misconceptions about what developing a good brand means? And how do you kind of like typically guide, whether that's a member or just a friend or a colleague or your own organization, in terms of developing and refining brand. What does that look like to you?
Yeah, thank you. I love this question. You're absolutely right. I'm so brand driven, if you will. I think one of the most common misconceptions about brands is your brand is not your logo, right? It's not an aspect of your business. Your business is your brand. And once you can understand that it's owned by everyone within the business or the company, not just the marketing team, not just the communications team, they're the guides of your brands. They're going to help you stay on brand, if you will, understanding how, the nuances of messaging and reiterating your mission and staying with the look and the feel. But your brand is really owned by everyone in the business. So anytime we're visual, like we are right now, or on social media, or taking any action that reflects back on our business, we're taking a brand action. This certainly has been amplified this year. A lot more of us have become brand influencers. And I'm not just talking about selling products or services, but just being a advocate for your organization, you become an influencer for the business itself. And the sooner we can all acknowledge that, I think the better we can be at being brand ambassadors for our organizations and understanding where that fits between this personal and professional mix that we're all experiencing right now, specifically on social media, but certainly anywhere we're going. I am not a brand ambassador for fresh produce when I'm at my son's baseball game. At least I don't perceive myself to be. But certainly the moment I pull out carrot sticks or a banana from my bag, where the baseball mom next to me maybe is pulling out something not as perishable, then I do become a brand ambassador all of a sudden. So there really is a broader world of brand than I think any of us realize. And the more we can put it into context of our day-to-day and think about the things we're doing that relate back to our business consciously and subconsciously, you realize just how much we're all responsible for the success and the communication of our brands.
Completely. I love this point as well. I've heard it said once that brand is the kind of sum total of all the interactions that someone in your audience has with you, right? And that could be a website visit, that could be seeing an ad, that could be receiving an email, that could be talking with somebody on your staff. But the sum of all of those interactions determines the kind of value or perception of your brand in the eyes of your audience. And that was a very much a perspective changing thing for me to hear. And now what I've seen kind of my role and my team's role as the marketing department is to be the kind of articulators of brand and the team that helps to clarify what the brand is, so that in each of those interactions, we can all be intentional about creating the kind of impression and the kind of perception that we're going after. Like we have to be able to clearly articulate that and communicate that and reflect on that, all of us and within any organization. It has to be clear enough that literally anybody can remind themselves about the purpose of the brand, about the values that we're trying to imbibe as an organization, and use that to determine their decisions and their behavior and how anything is done. And so I think the marketing and comms team, like you're saying, is the champions of that brand and like the definer, articulator, but everyone is responsible for upholding it. I love that point.
Absolutely. All of our organizations and companies have a mission statement. We have a North Star. I love that term. But does everyone employed by that organization know what that mission statement is? Or are the actions that they're taking on a daily basis in line with that mission statement? And that's where you're absolutely correct. We are the architects of that experience, helping our colleagues understand that every action you take as a representative of this organization is a reflection of our brand. And so we have to be on the same page. And that's going to ensure trust in the communities that we're supporting and engaging.
Yeah, that's great. Mary, one last question before we get you out of here, and thank you so much for the time today. And I'd like to ask this question to guests sometimes, which is, if you had a magic wand and could solve any professional problem, whether that's marketing or comms related or super tactical or something strategic, whatever it might be, that is not an unlimited pile of money, what would you use that for?
You know, I'm going to stick with brand on this one. I would love to continue to have the time to educate my colleagues about how they can be even greater influences for our industry in support of our brand. With 25 folks on staff, we really don't have that big of a challenge because everybody gets it. And I have the opportunity to interact with as many people as possible. But if there was an opportunity to do more education, to really amplify the tools and the services, to get everyone on LinkedIn and every social media channel saying the same thing and driving back to my hub, to that website, if we could do that all in unison, that would be a beautiful marketing morning for me. So, sir, it goes back to brand.
I'm with you on that one too. We're in the process of trying to do a lot more of that here at Feather too, of turning our staff into kind of brands into themselves, and aligning that with the mission of the organization and with the value that we're trying to deliver into the market. So, and it's not easy. It's really not easy. So. No. I might use mine for that same thing.
There you go. Good luck with that.
Okay. Mary, thank you so much. This has been so much fun. I've loved everything we've had a time to talk through, and I hope that Brandstorm is a smashing success. It sounds like it's gearing up to be like that, and best of luck on everything this year.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed my time with you today.